So it's shown the beginning of the remarks on the topic of the value of secular education. But then I'll try to have Mr. Hashem to respond to a few of the questions that were submitted. And then those who are still awake will be invited to ask for any follow-up questions or requests for clarification. That there's a profound dialectic which characterizes Avodas Hashem, which characterizes life. On the one hand, we're called upon to have a single-minded intensity and passion. Usually associated with extreme, with lack of balance, lack of nuance. But yet on the other hand, Avodas Hashem demands balance, nuance, and being measured. Examples of where that balance is required. But there are so many halachic, Torah, claims and demands on our time. Talmud Torah, Chesed, Gishtadus v'Panosa, family, Tzarki Tzibor. So how does one balance those in terms of time competing claims upon us? Another example, on the one hand, as Chazal caution us, the Rambam writes about halacha, that we should be mindful of what influences we expose ourselves to, because a person is influenced by those with whom he associates, but with those by whom he's surrounded. So how do we balance sensitivity to that, on the one hand, with interacting with Jews who are not yet religious, not yet Shomer Torah mitzvahs, especially within our own families, as is often the case? One of the areas in which we are called upon to strike the right balance in Avodas Hashem is in our attitude to the outside world, to things outside of Torah. Obviously, we have to identify for what it is and reject anything and everything that's not true, anything and everything that runs contrary to Torah. Me'idach gisa, chokhma bagoyim tamen, where we have to acknowledge what is true. And sometimes, when halacha says, for instance, that if there's questions of pikuach nefesh, so we look to expert medical information. So the halacha says explicitly that the source of that expert medical information isn't going to necessarily only be Jewish doctors. The sources may be non-Jewish doctors, and they may be the experts in the relevant field. So we cannot indiscriminately reject everything which comes from the outside world. We obviously can't indiscriminately accept everything that comes from the outside world. So we have to strike the right balance. Again, balance in every context doesn't necessarily mean 50-50. It means that both things should be present and represented in the proportion that's appropriate in this context. Balance might be 1% and 99%. It may be 0.0001% and 99.999%. So balance isn't, doesn't imply that it's a 50-50 division. I don't know that conceptually that this needs to be true. It doesn't need to be true conceptually. But practically, in our generation, B'nai Korah, with a good secular education, have a much easier time. And again, and part of good secular education means that the right balance exists between the Limud HaKol, the Shem Mohavdel, the Limud HaKol, and that the Limud HaKol are studied discriminatingly. But B'nai Torah, with a good secular education, have a much easier time of recognizing the need for and striking that balance in the vital area of how we relate to the outside world. Why is that the case? So perhaps, I don't know, perhaps this is speculative. I think until now, I don't think we're speculative, but this is speculative. Perhaps for the following reason. Consider Moshe Lamad Ovad Dome. I think many of us live in more or less homogeneous communities. More or less. And I think many, maybe most of us, in terms of the schools that we attended, it's also more or less homogeneous. And obviously within the spectrum of from Jews, the spectrum is much more heterogeneous than our immediate exposure. Usually, not always the case, but for many of us that is the case. And when that is the case, so what happens sometimes is that since we don't have any exposure, sort of any meaningful personal contact with other communities, that what we, in quotation marks, know of them is based on stereotypes. That community X is such and such, and we have the stereotype that that depicts community X, and community Y is such and such with its stereotype, and the only, and our own community for others has its stereotype as well. And stereotypes, as we know, tend to be indiscriminating and undiscerning. When instead of our, again in quotation marks, our knowledge of other communities, other types of Jews within the firm community, within the Torah world, instead of it being based on stereotypes, when there's actual interaction, when there's personal contact, so very often that's eye-opening. And we realize that, yes, of course there are differences between the communities, and of course there is heterogeneity, but we realize how inaccurate the stereotypes are, and how different the reality is than the stereotype suggested, and how much there is that stereotypes generally elicit more opposition, and personal contact often will command respect and affection in a way that stereotypes don't. So the rather distant nimshal is that it's easy to have to not, again, appreciate those pockets in the outside world that are important, that are valuable. It's easy not to recognize it and not to appreciate it if there's no exposure. When there is exposure, so then the reality of fill in the particular legitimate discipline, the reality of exposure to that is eye-opening. And it becomes much easier, and we're much better positioned to have that crucial sense of balance in our interaction with, in our attitude towards the outside world, and know how to modulate and set the filter accordingly. So that's one perspective. A second perspective, this is more of a perspective actually on the value of a college degree than it is on college education and secular education. The mission at the end of Kiddushin, Ra'olam Yilamid Odom is Beno Umnas Kalo Nakir. So what that means practically, Bizman Hazah, I don't know that this is what it literally means in the context of the Mishnah, but what it sort of practically means when transposed to our Mitzvahs Bizman Hazah, is that a person should, one of the mitzvahs haben alaav, one of the obligations of the father to his son, is to equip the son to earn a living, to make his shadlus for panasa. And Chazal say it should be an umnas kalo nekiyah. What that translates to for us, bizman hazeh, is that it should provide a good panasa with a good work-life balance. There are some things which don't really provide adequate parnasa. There are other things which provide more than adequate parnasa, but don't have the right work-life balance. And in Umnas Kalo Nekiyah, in the way that translates in our terms, is that it's a good parnasa with a good work-life balance. You know, there is a very understandable and on one level a noble inclination that idealistic people can have and do have, which is, you know, the world is, we're not here for Gashmias, and I don't want to think about money, I want to focus on Dvarim Mukhaniyah, Montorah, on Avodas Hashem, and whatever. Echshu, when the time comes, I'll deal with it. So the best way to accomplish not having to think about money is to have a good job and have enough money, and then you don't have to think about money. And Rachman Litzlan, I don't mean this humorously, Rachman Litzlan, the people who spend the most time thinking about money are the people who don't have a good job and don't have enough money. And the way to make money a non-factor and a non-issue and a non-focus in life is to have enough of it. It doesn't mean that one has to be wealthy, but to have enough that there isn't a crisis every time a bill, and some of them are unplanned for. When a bill arrives in the mail, for many people, maybe most, not all, but the path to an umnas kalo nekiyah goes through a college education and degree. For many people, not all, but for many, many people, the way to access, the way to open the door to an Umnas Kala Nikia, who's not as there, is with college education and college degree. A third perspective. In terms of the, here again, we're turning not to the value of a college degree, but of the education itself. I think it's true that the Sadia Gaon couldn't have written Emunas V'Deyos without having studied Arabic philosophy. And the Rambam couldn't have written Maron Avuchim without having studied Greek and Arabic philosophy. And the Rav couldn't have written Isha Halacha, Halachic Mind, without studying everything he did, and especially Kantian philosophy. Now, that shouldn't be misunderstood, Chas V'Shalom, to be questioning the Torahic authenticity of any of the above mentioned works and Chachmei Yisrael. There is a remarkable, profound comment from Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Chalap. He has this in one of his Sfarim Meimorim. I think it's in the Meimorim on Shmuel Prakim, I think. He writes it in very poetic language, so it needs to be translated into prose. But he writes that the Rambam didn't just quote Aristotle. The Rambam was first Megayer the ideas, and then he quoted them. That's not a verbatim quote, but I think I haven't looked at it very recently, but I think it's an accurate paraphrase. What does it mean to be Megayer? What does it mean to be Megayer Aristotle's ideas? So what it means is that Chachmei Yisrael, when they did study, and there definitely was such a tradition amongst Chachmei Yisrael, it wasn't the only tradition, there were different traditions, there were differences of opinion amongst the Rishonim. But when those Chachmei Yisrael who did study from the Chachmei Umos Olam, so they did so, they reflected upon everything they studied from the perspective of Torah. And what was wrong, what was antithetical, what was just useless, so they didn't make the cut, they discarded. But what was productive, categories of thought that were useful for understanding, interpreting, presenting Torah, so then they recast them in a totally different context. And as such, when one reads the Rav's writings, one doesn't really need any theoretical arguments as to the value of Chachma, but just reading and seeing what he does with it is just so overpowering and so overwhelming. So that is definitely a third perspective on secular education. Honestly, I don't know to how many of us that's relevant. I don't know how many of us to, on our own, use the secular education that way. It requires a lot of Torah knowledge to be able to be discerning and discriminating in terms of what is congenial, what is helpful,
what's a candidate for Yaakov Moshe Chalav's Gerus, and what isn't a candidate for the Gerus he describes. It requires also a certain, I think, creative bent in terms of seeing the possible connections, uses, etc. So I don't know. It's certainly relevant to Yechidim, but I don't know whether this is necessarily something that is relevant to most of us. So those are our three perspectives on the topic at hand. Just to maybe briefly comment on some of the questions that were submitted. Virtually all of the questions can't be fully answered in such a forum, because the answers to most of the questions need to be individualized. So obviously that can't happen in such a forum. But just to maybe talk about some of the principles which are more general and would likely be part of every individual's deliberation and ultimate decision. So one of the questions, I'll just read it. For most of us, we can get an online degree in a quicker and more efficient way than at YU. As things become more and more online, it will generally not negatively affect our careers, open parentheses, depending upon what we study, i.e. business or finance or undergraduate psychology, close parentheses. Why should we stay at YU where it will take us longer and it is not a complete yeshiva environment? Would it make more sense to leave YU and enroll in an online college for classes and learn in a, quote, real, unquote, yeshiva? It's certainly true that one distinctive feature of our yeshiva is its integration of the yeshiva, of yeshivas of Ben Yitzchak Elchanan, of the undergraduate Torah studies programs with the different college tracks, yeshiva college tzeisims. That's certainly a distinctive feature, and it's certainly significant. But the decision of whether to come here to yeshiva is much bigger and much broader than just the cheshbon of which is reflected in this question. Every yeshiva, and ours is no exception, has a certain character. It has a certain identity. The character of yeshivas of Ben Yitzchak Elchanan and its identity includes much, much more than its views on secular education and its connection to the college. Again, that's certainly part of it, but there's much more than that. In terms of a hashkofa, in terms of a derech hachayim, there's much, much more that the yeshiva has always represented and continues to represent. You know, some of the issues that by way of introduction that we spoke about in terms of finding the right balance in so many different areas in Avodas Hashem, the balance between Talmud Torah and Hishtadlus for Parnasa, again, the balance between the balance between insulating ourselves from outside influences and the reality of that within so many of our own families that there are relatives who are not yet from relating to the outside world, which is what we're talking about here. The yeshiva certainly has a character and identity in teaching a derech hachayim, imparting a hashkafa and a derech hachayim in that very, very crucial question. Again, not everything, I don't mean to imply that everything I'm going to mention in the next minute or two is unique to YU and can only be found here. I don't mean to be implying that. How one relates to secular authorities, the yashrus, which is required in terms of following din de malchusa, is certainly part of the character, identity, derech hachayim that is taught and imparted here. The positive attitude towards Medinas Yisrael, not necessarily towards every policy of Medinas Yisrael, but towards the existence of a Medina. The appreciation and the covered to Gedol Yisrael across the entire spectrum, past and present, regardless of whether or not they're the Gedol Yisrael who are the Morei Derech for our Derech or not. You know, the fact that you know, in a Shir from Rav Shechter, you can hear everyone quoted from Rav Kook to the Minchas Alaza is something very, very beautiful. And each one is quoted. It requires more than tremendous bekiyas. It requires that also, not to take that for granted. But it requires more than that also, and not to overlook that second element either. And that's also something very, very beautiful, and part of the hashkofa, and part of the derech hachaim, which is imparted in the yeshiva. So yes, it certainly is a distinctive feature, the connection that the yeshiva has with Yeshiva College. But that's only part of it, and I don't think it's even the most important part. I don't think it's even the defining part. It's one of several different areas that taken together give the yeshiva its identity and its character. And all of that has to be, when a Talmud is deciding what the right place is for him to be learning, so it's not as simple as, you know, just sort of honing in with tunnel vision just on the college part of the equation. And another question that was submitted: is there ever a justifiable time for a person to do something in class besides to pay attention, participate, and take notes? I mean, when else are you going to improve your solitary skills? I mean, so here too, this question touches on a very, very important yisod of Rosh Hashanah. So in theory, we all know that midos are very important. And behaving in a mensch way is very important. Maybe some of us have come across the line from the Vilna Gaon that the neshama comes down to this world to be misaken its midos. That's the avodah of a person in life. Now, what would be the following? Let's say I'm hungry, so I need to buy some meat for dinner. So, on my block, there's a treifa supermarket, I can get some treifa meat. The kosher supermarket is 2 miles away. So if I go to the kosher supermarket, I don't have a car. It's going to take me 30 minutes to walk. Then it's going to take an hour. It's going to take an hour and a half. The treifa restaurant is mamash right here. It's mamash right on the block. It's taking 30 seconds in. There's an express lane out. And that's mamash a bit little Torah. I like to schlep all the way to an hour and a half to the kosher grocery. Mamash a bit little Torah, no? So I'll just go get the... So that, l'yala l'adas. But we do that all the time when it comes to meals. So let's say a person's in a class and he's not gaining anything from the class. Okay, let's say let's imagine such a scenario. So chaval al azman, right? So I'll do other things, but where's the midos? So the same way, observing the halachas of kashrus requires time. So displaying the right midos does also require an investment of time and a dedication of time. So if there's no attendance requirement and the teacher's not makbid, and the teacher says you want to come, you don't want to come, don't come, and you don't want to come, so don't come. But if the teacher's makbid on attendance, or the teacher wants you to come, so then yeah, so maybe you're not gonna learn anything from the 50 minutes of the class. So you'll devote 50 minutes to displaying the right midos. The same way, you may have to devote an hour to go shopping in the kosher supermarket rather than in the non-treifa supermarket. Okay, I think that was at the end of the of part two. So if there are some questions for clarifications, whatever.
What Rebbe said about the seemed like Rebbe was saying if Dafkan philosophy is not relevant today. Does that Afuke natural sciences or also natural sciences? Meaning to most people.
Thank you. So I actually had intended to speak about that more broadly. Thank you for the reminder. So we're all familiar with the Rambam in Perek Beis. If you saw the Torah, Ketzi Yaradach La'avosu V'yirosu. Right? B'shar she is born in Odom, B'maisu V'bu'a V'anifloim. And a person sees the Chof Moshe'in L'Erech L'Lokeitz, Z'miyahu Oiz, M'shabeach, M'floer, V'chulu. And that not only seems, but that does tell us that study of science is something that will be ma'ore ahava in Europe. But me'idav gisa, hachush makash. Seemingly. I don't know, not just because we see and know all the scientists who are very, very far in Avos Hashem and Yiras Hashem, but even in our own experience, I don't know, for some of us, I don't know, high school biology isn't necessarily the most favorite memory to dwell upon or whatever, and we don't necessarily... In thinking back, feel that we were inspired to Avos Hashem and Yiras Hashem, but Me'idach Gisa the Rambam says it is. So what's the cause of Ashlishi? So the Lashon HaRambam is, B'shar she'iz baran ha'adam, v'masav v'bu'a v'anuflan. That's Lashon HaRambam. Lashon HaRambam is not B'shar she'iz baran ha'adam ba'olam, v'abriya, Hanifla'a. It's b'masa v'v'ya v'nifla'in. If a person has a certain, let's call it God consciousness. If a person has a religious consciousness, if a person interacts with the world, he sees the world, he views the world, the lens through which he sees the world is That's the Varshal Briya. So then what the Rambam says follows. And that's why the Rambam said it as he does, and that's the Pasav HaShlishi. Certainly for someone who doesn't even recognize the Ribbono Shel Olam, and for whatever negiyas, for whatever reasons he has these blind spots, so lav dafka that studying science is going to enlighten him and is going to dispel those blind spots. And even someone who b'chas Hashem doesn't have those blind spots and is a ma'amin, but not necessarily on the level of that when he sees the world, he sees the world as ma'asav, capital H, his, capital H, upru of, capital H, ha-niflo'em, so lav dafka also, it may leave him cold, and he may wish that the world didn't have photosynthesis in it, and it would make his life a lot easier in studying for this for this bio test, you know. So there too, it very much depends upon the individual. Is it potentially a source? Yeah. So that's what first and Rambam. Is it actually a source? That depends upon the yochid, as to whether or not he views it. And reacts to it the way the Rambam is describing.
Do we believe that any truth that's found in psychology or in other disciplines can be found in the Torah? And Chachma Gayim Tamin means that Gayim can come to that conclusion on their own, but of course anything that's true is in Torah, or can Gayim come to true conclusions that we believe to be true, even though they can't be found within the Torah itself?
So there's a sefer Shari Talmud Torah, which is just the likud of Makaros, of Mara Makomos, no editorializing, with a long list of very, very, very distinguished Haskomos. I believe that in that sefer, he has a machlokas, he cites sources of the machlokas, of what it means in August when it says hafachba v'hafachba d'kulaba. So some understand hafachba v'hafachba d'kulaba that again all else in the world is in the Torah. And others say no, hafachba v'hafachba d'kulaba in terms of, you know, religious knowledge and but lav dafka that the way to design a successful vaccine or what the best treatment is for a certain psychological condition, that's an adult. So I think that's a difference of opinion.
Rabbi's talking a lot about sciences and that, and a lot of that is very clear in the Rambam, meaning that a lot of that can be seen, like you can see Hashem's Bria that way. Is there anything that this applies to more like the humanities also?
It's again, it's part of perspective number three, which again, I think is certainly true, but relevant to Yechidim is my impression, rather than to most of us. You know, the humanities and, let's say, literature can be different things. Sometimes literature is sort of philosophy, which instead of being written as a treatise, is written, you know, in narrative form, in the form of a story. And it's clear that certain ideas are being presented. And in that sense, IML, in terms of the potential value of literature at other times, is intended as a critique of society, it's which book is it? I think maybe it's in Gulliver's Travels, in one of the books. So there's a major war breaks out, and what was the impetus to the war? That the two nations who are looking to destroy each other. So the fight was that when you crack an egg, so the oval of the egg. So one end of the egg is sort of thinner, and the other one is wider and thicker. And the dispute was, you know, where you're supposed to crack the egg. And this explosive issue is what sparked this all-out war between the two countries. So literature is often a commentary on society, and as such, you know, in terms of highlighting weaknesses in human nature, and so it has value there also. You have to go, I'm not sure, I think most of those things are not being written today. I think most of those things were written a while ago. I'm not sure how valuable things that are being written today are.
Pebby mentioned a few times more of like a pragmatic sense that we should expose ourselves to the general world, the outside world, so that we can relate to non-from Jews. Is there any, you mentioned that we have the ability to relate to family members who aren't necessarily as from? Is that just like practical, or is that idealistic?
So what we discussed is, again, that one of the areas in which you have to strike a balance is, let's say you have, let's say parents are valid. So that means that their children's grandparents are not from. So on the one hand, that they want their children to be exposed to wholesome, pure Torah information. Me'idot Bisa, one cannot, should not disenfranchise one's own parents and cut them off from their own grandchildren. So that's one of the areas in one has to navigate and find what the right balance is between those two. Again, it's not just pragmatically, it's the right thing to do. To maintain the family relations, but it requires, on the other hand, it can't be indiscriminating. So one has to navigate and find what the right balance is between those two.
How's a person supposed to display good midos when he's in a class and then the teacher starts teaching things that are harmful to his brother?
So if it's something maybe talking about the topic and also about your question, but not intending everything to respond to the question. So first of all, again, if a person could anticipate that, so then he wouldn't take that class and would, I don't know, and speak to his rabbi and the dean of the college, just the why there is such a class. If a person didn't know, and because of that sort of stumbled into such a class, so again, so I, you know, the depending on the specifics of what's being said, and so because of that, it's impossible to generalize. If it's bad enough, well, not that it is, but if it's bad enough, so the person should just leave. And again, go talk to your rabbi and figure out what the best way is moving forward. Maybe the instructor is unaware that it's offensive, in which case maybe a person didn't have to leave. Maybe a person could just raise his hand and it's a judgment call, depending upon who the instructor is, what's being said. Maybe the instructor is unaware of the fact that it's offensive. And maybe, a simple, respectful, polite, you know, question, comment can nip it in the bud. Let's say that's not the case. Hopefully it won't happen. Let's say it's not the case. So then, I don't know, it could happen that a person would have to leave. But again, I wouldn't jump to that conclusion. Hopefully I would be a last resort, not the first order reaction. Sometimes I think, especially if the teacher is new to YU and is not so attuned to what the sensitivities are, sometimes it's not being done maliciously, it's not being done very average, it's just out of ignorance. And they will respond to a non-confrontational, respectful group request. If that's not the case, then that's a big problem. If it's really, really bad enough, so then a person, I'm going way out, but I think a person would leave if it were bad enough, if it goes to a certain level. And then I think you talk to your Rebbe and you figure out the plan, talk to the dean, talk to how to try to address and redress the situation.
Given that many people haven't achieved the level that Rebbe was talking about before, about appreciating Hashem through various secular subjects, which secular subjects should be standardized, and to what extent should they be standardized across the levels of our education system?
The question is an excellent question. I don't think I'm ready to give a careful enough answer. Other than to just endorse the premise of the question, that in thinking and talking about the value of secular education, that we shouldn't make the mistake of just sort of transposing what the Western ideal of education is, and just transplanting that and transposing it. It should be based on our values and our Torah considerations, what that should be. But the question is too good. I'm not ready to carefully enough respond.
To clarify, based on the question about humanities, does Rebbe think that there's a fundamental difference between the sciences, math, things that can be proved with truths, formulas, studies, as opposed to literature, poetry, art, music, things that are more subjective and can be appreciated, or both of them, if used properly, can connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Is there still a difference there? and if there isn't, then when Chazal say Chachma L'Dayan Taman, is that more a loose definition, or do they mean something more rigid and concrete when saying what Chachma is?
I know that Chol Sal Bavos in Akdama talks about the seven branches of wisdom, so I guess that would be one haramokam in terms of music actually is there, but I don't think music meant what it means for us today, with respect to the other music. Music was, going back to the ancient Greeks, which was something that was considered mathematical. So the Chavos Avos does have music as one of the Shevachotos, but we have to make sure not to interpret that anachronistically. Now, of course, there's a difference between those two disciplines. I think Lahavdil, where the Ramban writes in Hadoma to Mochanos, he says that there are no tshuvos to get not mitzvios in the sense of eternal, but in terms of absolutely conclusive. Sometimes you can have a machlokes rishonim, and as we know from every shtickel in the Chayim, and both sides of machlokes rishonim are equally cogent, equally compelling. It's pshat in the sugya. So in learning, so Ramban says, don't expect in Mochavos, when I defend the Rif, don't expect me to defend the Rif in a way that makes his view the exclusive view. I'm going to defend the Rif that his view is legitimate and correct and valid, but the Lamdavka to the exclusion of other views. So Lahavdil. So obviously that's a difference in geometry. You can have a proof, and you can prove, you know, that the two angles are equal, or the two angles are not equal, and you don't have that type of proof in humanity. So certainly that is a major difference, which is why humanities can and sometimes do very often deteriorate into worthless wetsuras, because of the nature of the discipline. The stock market goes up, so one day the Wall Street was happy about this, the next day Wall Street woke up in bad mood, and so the economists tell you that the stock is unhappy. So you can say this way, you can say that way. No one's going to... So of course there's a difference, and in that sense, even I think that the modern conception of science is that science is giving you a model of reality as opposed to reality. That science gives you a construct which accounts for what happens in the world, but it doesn't presume to say this is the absolute. But even that, the scientific theories can be falsified. That they make statements and they make predictions which are open to, not to verification, but they're open at least to falsification. Again, which is something, and in that sense, there's obviously an objective dimension which doesn't exist in the humanities, and that is a very, very big difference. I don't know that value, I don't know that we're necessarily talking about that it directly connects to personality of Baruch Hu. To read a book and come away with an understanding of something about human nature, whether that directly connects with matter as well. But is it value? Does it have value? Is it sort of part of it that can be a link in a chain? It can be a link in a chain. So I'm not sure that the test is always, the immediate connection, but there are lots of things that have value because they're a link in a chain, they're part of the process. But there is a very very, very real difference between those types of those types of disciplines. And where exactly the social sciences want to be considered sciences. Those in the natural sciences don't think they're sciences. That's the whole focus. Increasingly, when one sees today how things which are part of the social sciences are just so politicized, it makes the case harder to make that they're sciences.
Are there any secular books or secular authors that Rebbe personally has found value in?
there are lots of such books, but again, I think it's kind of there is a subjective element to it. There's, you know, one of the one of the things that the Maskilim historians like to do is to say, well, the first time, you know, they'll look through the Gemara, whatever, and say the first time you find a mention of the Din of Pikuach Nefesh is at such and such a point in history. And how can it be that there's no record of it beforehand? So one is taken aback. So there is a. I read a very, very small part of this book, so I can't tell you whether the book as a whole is kosher. I can't put an OU on it. I hope it is, but I don't know. I read a small part of it. So there's a book called The Singer of Tales. So two people went out to Yugoslavia. I don't know if they were anthropologists or I forget what their field was, and this was their field work. And they studied local culture in Yugoslavia. And they came up with a chiddush otzum. That they discovered that there in Yugoslavia, I think it was in Yugoslavia, somewhere far away from New York, right? If I think of Yugoslavia, I'm not positive. That there were, a lot of them were just shepherds, they were illiterate. But there was this tradition of that they used to have these stories which were set, which had a tune, hence the title of Singer of Tales. And they were passed down orally from generation to generation. And this was a chiddush otzlum, that there's such a thing as a culture which is oral and not written. Chiddush otzlum. So if you ever meet someone who didn't grow up with, you know, learning Torah and knowing about Torah Shebaal Peh, and needs help in acclimating to it, or needs guidance in responding to these kinds of absurd distortions as to, well, the first time you find this mentioned is this century, that century, well, obviously, Torah is an oral culture, and you can't look at written records when you want to date an oral culture. The same way, these two, again, I forget if they were anthropologists or what their field was, the same way they couldn't document these singers of tales with any kind of written documentation. So there are lots of, in so many different fields, that there are books here and there, but, you know, it depends upon, you know, what you do with it and the associations you make. So I don't know if I can really give a reason.
Just to clarify the question about online courses, if we did see our person could learn three Siddharim day in yeshiva here and take online courses, is everyone saying that would be a preferable option because they can get all of the other aspects that are going to be described about the yeshiva?
No, because, again, the answer has to be individualized. Maybe yes, but maybe no. It depends on whether some of the other perspectives we spoke about are relevant. But I couldn't give a bottom line on anything in this kind of forum, because the answers to these types of questions all need to be individualized. Might the answer be yes? Yeah, the answer might be yes. It definitely might be yes. Will it be yes? I don't know. That's a different story. Okay, maybe just one or two, and then we'll stop.
Rabbi spoke about the need to be discriminated and filter out problematic ideas and things like that, and read it in classes. I think most of us think of those things in kind of more more blatant or categorical, like isurim, like things like that relate to erva or pizzas or like emuna, things like that. I was wondering if Rabbi could speak to maybe the more like subtle or like other ways of characterizing what the concern might be or the problems might be besides those kind of more categorical isurim.
but biases can be blatant, or they can be subtle. Sometimes it's not necessarily what's said explicitly as a certain attitude, which is an undercurrent. If one reads something in Jewish history, and again, so if one reads about Tkufas Tanakh or Tkufas Chazal, one's reading the wrong author, so one, it won't be subtle, it will be blatant. What's unacceptable? Hopefully one's not reading that in the first place. But one can be reading about medieval, and the attitude, and talking about the Rishonim, is not the attitude of Yeros HaKavod that one has in approaching Rishonim. And it's not always... Inevitably, it will result at some point in also saying the wrong thing, but there are attitudes also. In reading some secular books, there are certain, again, the way things are sympathetically portrayed can be something, again, it's not as blatant, although let's say I think just about every high school reads it. I think many high schools read it. The Scarlet Letter. You read that in high school? Anyone?
Yeah.
Okay, so Lemaisa, one of the elements of the Scarlet Letter is that the woman who committed adultery and the priest with whom she committed adultery are portrayed sympathetically, and it's only her old, mean husband who's portrayed demonically. Not that portrayal is accurate, but the sympathy and sort of making them into heroic figures. I mean, it was Yehoi Blaviyahu from our perspective on what happened. So that, it's not in the lines, but there's a certain attitude, and I don't know, so I think most high school kids maybe miss that, so it's okay. So maybe it's okay, I don't know, I ain't enough. Maybe not, I don't know. But there can be subtle things also, you know, which are sort of... Yeah, that's why it's very important to be able to be discerning and discriminating. Okay, maybe this will be the last one, yeah.
Usually, parents like to see the better the grade, they're a bit happier. So is there any incentive to keep it up an aim that working harder, spending more time studying, whatever, to produce a greater grade, be fulfillment, a greater fulfillment, like keep it up an aim because they want to see a higher grade?
My sense is that in many cases you don't even sort of necessarily get to that question. But I know often, not always, but often will be the case, you know, that there are other reasons why we can't be shabbos. You want to have good grades. I don't know if his path in life, you know, goes to graduate school, so obviously he has, without, you know, coming to terms with is it Kibbutz Avayim or not, he has an interest in doing as well as he can. So I think often that the question will not arise. In general, in terms of Kibbutz Avayim, the chiyuv of Kibbutz Avayim, there are things which are a chiyuv in terms of kibbutz ha'olam, and there are things which are which there's a chiyuv of kibbutz ha'olam, but not necessarily a chiyuv. So the chiyuv of kibbutz ha'olam is basically to provide service to the parents. That's the I think the dominant aspect of the chiyuv of kibbutz ha'olam. That ma'achila or mashkehu, if a parent needs, it happens sometimes with elderly parents, that the parent needs help maybe drinking, with the shopping, with getting about, machnisa, motzio. So is rendering physical service. When in their presence, they show honor, there's a chiyuv to stand for one's parents, etc. In terms of chiyuv, kibbutz ha'olam, there's no chiyuv to. It doesn't really mean to. In terms of the chiyuv, it doesn't mean necessarily to, I don't know, do everything possible that gives them nachas. In terms of the chiyuv, kibbutz ha'olam, formally. It is the. In terms of where there's a kiyum, kibbutz ha'olam, so that's really a much broader definition than the chiyuv. I think but one of the achronim on the side of the page in your event, I forget who, says that let's say a person wants to practice a certain midas chasidus. I don't know, that's the fast behalf. And somehow or other, his parents become aware of it. And for whatever reason, his parents are close to it. So he says that one shouldn't engage in a midas chasidus if it's something that's going to be the tzar of the parents. So not because there's a chiyuv of kibbutz ha'olam there, but he's saying that but there is a chiyuv of kibbutz ha'olam, and that takes precedence over this midas chasidus. He doesn't give that example, so in case that's not a good example, it's not his example. Here too, that there are other things to be considered in terms of is this kind of compartmentalized, the parents want good grades, or that is the same way they want good grades, they want other things which ultimately becomes too intrusive. And also the question would have to be fleshed out for the answer to be individualized. Thank you.